Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and we want to wish all your moms out there a happy Mother Day.
There we go. And curiously
enough, say in England Mothering Day, and we say Mother's Day.
It's actually called Mothering Sunday, and it is an official Sunday in the Church of England calendar. But guess what?
It's not even the same day.
Merchandisers and stores and everything got a hold of it, just like they got a hold of Halloween and added it to the calendar, but it is on a different day of the year. But so to all you mothers in England and to all you mothers in different countries around the world where Fête Mama, I think it is in Paris, is celebrated on a different day, well, we wish you all a Mother's Day just in case we miss you on the day it's really supposed to be. Yeah. And we're, of course...
Can I say a special...
Of course you can.
God bless you. Mother chefs. I mean, that's a hard job.
It is. It is indeed. There's absolutely no question about that.
Yeah, handling those two jobs are...
If I was a mother, I wouldn't want to be a chef. If I was a father, I wouldn't want to be a chef either, I'm guessing, because it's really hard work. But here we have today an assembled company of extraordinarily fine chefs cooking an extraordinary...
Well, you say, I didn't know if you meant exotic... Casual dining in London,
yes,
or exotic and casual dining.
Well, does it matter?
I don't know. I guess not.
I think it's actually a little bit of both.
Plus, where to be seen, yeah. Or just to enjoy.
Absolutely.
Those are your words.
You're right. Well, in that case, I probably got it right, huh?
Yeah.
Starting off. Yeah. Anne's just about favorite fall. In fact, it's really embarrassing to be around Anne and her hero, Bruno Loubet.
Oh, come on.
because she loves him so much. I'm obviously thrust into...
So good.
I'm thrust into second place. We had the delight of having Bruno cook for us in a slightly different way in a new location called Grain Store.
Which is really a handsome space.
Yes. Those of you who are listening to us in Pittsburgh, imagine... something like Bakery Square times 5, and you have an idea of the kind of area that Grain Store is in, what used to be a post-industrial wasteland, and is now a location of not a new development, some redevelopment of existing buildings, and it's going to be the headquarters of Google Europe. Good old Bruno and his partner certainly picked a great place to open a restaurant, and our experience dining there said that Grain Store is great, and... The Granary Square development is very lucky that Bruno's there.
I don't think it's a secret anymore, Bruno Loubet, that I'm just crazy about your cooking. We've known you for quite some time now. Your original London restaurant, from your second trip to London, or stay in London, the Bistro Bruno Loubet. And we talked last year a little bit about your new place, and now we're here, and it's a reality, and it's far bigger and far more distinctive than I ever imagined. Tell us a little bit about Grain Store.
Thank you. Grain Store is the project started many years ago for me. About 20 years ago, I already thought that the vegetable was something not used properly in dishes, and they seem to always have the second role on the plate. So I decided to put them on the front and to basically put everything upside down. So the veg become the focus on the plate, and the meat, the protein come, well, not the protein, because there is also protein in, you could get protein in veg, but say the animal product or the fish come as a garnish or as a seasoning or as a little complement of the dish. So it's all upside down. And we started 10 months ago, and it's been received very, very well. So, I mean, we have a little thing on the way, you know, people who thought, you know, what is this and where is my meat or things like that. But now we fully accept it, and I think it's, you know, we're going very well and looking forward to work even more in that direction. Because by doing it now, I realize there is even more than what I thought. I have this idea of putting the veg on the front, and absolutely myself like to eat more veg as well. But by doing it in the restaurant and going through the year, because now we're nearly open for a year, we went through the last summer and the winter, and obviously we enter the spring now, we learn a lot. And it's even more interesting than I imagined before I start. So it's really good.
Well, I mean, it's not just the wave of the future. It's the future is now almost... most people I know have really come to the conclusion that it's a healthier lifestyle, and in many cases, such as your cooking, a more delicious lifestyle ever, to eat more vegetables. Now, this place, Grain Store, is, you're still the surrounding area. It's an upcoming area that's still under construction. Can you explain where we are?
We are just at the back of King's Cross Station, which is one of the main stations in London. That's where the TGV, the fast train from Europe, from France, from the continent, come in. This is an area which has been kind of closed for something like 30 or 40 years, you know. So it was a kind of a forgotten place. In the last 6 years, they decide to regenerate the area, and because it's obviously the position is excellent, and also it's full of beautiful old London building. As you can see around you, there is a lot of old building, and the way they regenerate the area is beautifully done. So we're really proud to be in this area, and we know we're doing quite well already with the restaurant, and we know this is going to be one of the nicest places to be in London very soon. So we're really happy to be there.
This is going to be one hot location. I'm looking outside. They haven't even finished landscaping yet. There are pools with water spouts. It's really cool. And I noticed your clientele is generally smart and young. What kind of decor? I love it.
The decor, see, when we start the project, we decide we're going to go full on. And so not a restaurant with a nice decor and then the food going with it, but we decide that the decor should really go with the food, and the food being vegetables and simple and honest. And so basically that's what we apply to the decor, very simple, honest. It's a walking place. As you can see, you could see some jars of product in the restaurant, and that's actually jars we're using. It's not there only for decoration, it's also other use in the kitchen. The beer, cake are hanging around the restaurant, everything. So it's an happening place. We want to give this feel that this is a place, a real place. You go there and you feel the life of the restaurant in a very comfortable room, and you don't know what's going on in the kitchen, or you're part of the whole place. And the kitchen is designed also in a way that feel actually the kitchen is in the restaurant. So when you sit in the restaurant and you eat, you feel like the chefs are cooking for you, especially, you know. It's a little bit like being at home, being in your kitchen, and you cook for your friends. This is this kind of thing. So
well, you were actually cooking for us, and I mean, I trust you, as I told you, without any hesitation, because you're right on in terms of your concepts, your seasoning. What are some of the things we had today? Well, first, let's start with the one that I think should be a tutorial for all young chefs, is the duck dish, which is, it's one of the hardest things to teach a young cook, is this idea of balance, especially with acidity. Could you just walk us through the duck dish, pointing out how you balance one element against the other?
Okay, the duck dish is based around red veg, actually. So we have some treviso and radicchio, which are quite bitter salads, bitter leaves. And then we have some beetroot, which is sweet, baked beetroot. They are baked in their own skin, so in a wood-burning oven. So they retain all their very healthy flavors. And so we don't cook them in the water or steam them or anything like that. So we really, they cook with their own moisture, basically, and all the flavors, the full flavors. And then we have the sauce of the duck, made with the bone of the duck. But the sauce of the duck is made with a bit of maple syrup, and also to get a bit of a sweetness. But then we counterbalance with a very good sherry vinegar. And we cook and reduce down. And then to finish it off, just to give a little kick, because what's happening on the plate, just to kind of push the flavor of the bitterness on the plate and the sweetness of the beetroot, we put some pickled red currants in the sauce at the last minute, just to warm up in the sauce. And of course, the duck is roasted, so we cook it only on the skin side to really render the fat and to make it to give a nice flavor and a bit of a crisp to the skin. And then we finish it off in a wood burning oven to give this nice old fashioned woody flavor. So it's a simple dish when you look at it. It's actually a lot of different elements coming together and treated in different ways to one plate, one finished plate.
I mean, I think you love all your ingredients. That's one of the things I notice about, no matter what the small plate, appetizer, main, whatever it is, you seem to be in love with your ingredients. And I kept asking you, where do these ideas come from? How do you get this I mean, you're French trained. This is not just endemic to that. I mean, it's sort of unusual that you could break the boundary so many times and get it right. How do you conceive of these dishes?
Well, for start, I've been cooking for 36 years now. So I've been in the kitchen for 36 years. So obviously I amass quite a bit of knowledge and experience and passion. I still have the passion burning, you know, today. And then by starting this project 2 years ago of cooking, you know, putting the vegetable on in a front stage, I start to discover things. I always have this idea. Well, for about 20 years I have this idea on the back of my mind and always come up with it and then go along with my career. But then having the possibility to do it, then I invest myself 100% in it. And then I realized there is so much more door I can open and things to discover. Like, for example, during the winter, we've done some fermentation. We've done a lot of sprouting things and smoking and all these kind of things to make the menu more interesting. And that's, for me, the excitement and the interest bring the knowledge, all this, bring this creativity. And I'm very excited about this because for me it's like before I was a bit like a painter cooking, painting with on black and white, and suddenly you give him a lot of colors. Well, he's very happy and realize he can do a lot of things, and that's what's happening. You know, I'm very excited, so I kind of look at everything, and of course to make it interesting, you have to come up with a lot of different techniques and different in products, and so I use things from Korea or China, you know, Asian product. I use things from India. I use things from France, Italy, Spain, North countries. All over the world, really, I look at what kind of ingredient, what kind of technique they're using, and then I may apply on something else. But I have this open interest about all the techniques and the flavors, and try to make something which I'm happy with and makes sense for me, and I will be happy to eat myself for start.
Well, you can taste your excitement in the food you create. You don't just do anything by rote. I mean, a very standard French thing is, in the spring, radishes with butter. Now, okay, you have the radishes. Your butter is whipped goat butter. And what was it you served it with?
We made what we call the wasabi soil. And so it looks like the soil, but it's actually rye flour and wheat flour mixed with coconut oil, salt, pepper, and wasabi, grated wasabi, and we bake it and then crumble it, and it looks like the ground. So it's lovely because you dip the radish in the butter, which has been whipped, the goat butter, so it's very soft and it sticks to the radish. Then you can dip your radish in your butter in the soil. Now you have all these little crunchy little bits with this nice mustardy flavor, which goes extremely well with radish.
And of course, then we have the grits made out of popcorn.
Yes, I like polenta and grits and this kind of thing. But I kind of want to do something a bit different. And I thought, you know, oh, what it would be if I, you know, maybe I can grind some popcorn and see how it works. And I try, and it works. It actually make it kind of more creamy. And because here we're very conscious as well on the menu of the diets. Because by being a restaurant, you know, we already have a reputation of cooking something maybe a bit more healthy because we're using so much more veg. So we kind of attract a lot of people with special diets, which for some chefs is a nightmare, but for us it's a proof of we're doing something a bit different. And then like this particular dish, I didn't want to put any dairy in it. So it's to me, it's very tasty considering there is absolutely no dairy. There is no butter, no cheese in the grits. So the grits is cooked rice milk. But the fact that we open the corn and make the popcorn, they are more creamy. You know, they get this creaminess when they cook with rice milk. And then we stir some olive oil in it, and also some nuch, you know, deactivated yeast. It's deactivated yeast or culinary yeast. And it gives this slight cheesy flavor without having any dairy in it. And then on the top, we cover it with a little ragout of fresh broad beans and peas and tarragon and chives. And again, there is absolutely no butter. It's only peas which have been bliss with the vegetable stock and a little bit of olive oil. So when you have, and of course, finish with some morels which have been glazed in their own juice with olive oil and salt and pepper as well. So when you eat the whole dish, it's... to me, it's quite flavorsome. You know, there is a lot of things happening there, and it's flavorsome. But actually, there is absolutely no butter, no cheese, no cream, nothing which for me is an easy way to get the flavor, but there we make it more difficult for ourselves, but then we can provide dishes which are good for certain diets.
I still don't understand what gives you the initial idea, but then that's your genius, and I don't know what it causes it. You have a cookbook out. Is that going to teach me how to cook the way you do?
Actually, the book came out last June, and it's about my career, my travel, and where I start and how I end up in Bistro Bruno in London, my other restaurant. The next book will be about the grain store and this philosophy about eating more veg and making the most of everything growing from the ground, you know, coming from the ground. But yeah, my last cookbook was well overdue because I didn't do a book for many years, for like 15 years or something. It's more bistro, but bistro with a twist, some modern touch. And it's about, you know, it's the kind of food I will cook at home, really, for friends and family. And there's a lot of little stories about anecdotes, and it, quite personal because it's very family-oriented. And it's a nice book, and it's been selected for an award, big fair in China, the Gourmand Fair, which is all book related to food. And yeah, apparently it's in the last four for the best French book in cookery French book in the world.
Well, I mean, I think basically none of us is going to be able to cook the way you do with the same ideas, so it's best to come here, and that's what we keep doing. And we're just thrilled to bits. And maybe in the future you'll be replicating this concept of the grain store you indicated, but you're not ready to talk about that now. As always, I love coming here, eating your food, and asking you questions, which I still don't understand where you get these fabulous ideas, but thank you.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure, as always. And you may see something different next year. Who knows?
And a real treat is, in case you don't know, Farouk Goel, the restaurant manager, he is just over the top wonderful and so sharp. We've known him for a while now, and boy, is he a pro. Anyhow, it's time now to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. Now, the next restaurant, we've eaten there before, but we never interviewed this chef, who's absolutely wonderful, Nieves Barragan Mohacho.
And here's her story. We're downstairs again at 33 Charlotte Street, and you'll never find it if you look on Charlotte Street because it's around the corner, and down the steps is a restaurant we first went to in 2004, 10 years ago, and the main chef wasn't there that day. There was a new face peering out through the pass from the kitchen at Fino Restaurant, I should say. That's where we are. It was Nieves Barragan Mohacho. And we have never had the opportunity to interview her for On the Menu. So we knew that Fino had reopened after a flood. We knew you were back at the home in this restaurant. And we thought it was time to talk to you. So welcome, first of all, to On the Menu for the first time.
Thank you very much, and very welcome again to see you after so many years. I hope you will enjoy the dinner. I'm so glad I'm going to cook today for you and have an idea what is my style of Spanish cooking, and I hope you enjoy.
Now, we mustn't forget the exciting news, too. Owners Sam and Eddie are always up to something. And they're up to something once again, which they didn't tell us about, but which we just found out about from Nieves, an addition to the Fino family. So before we talk too much and distract people from that exciting news, let's do that first.
Yeah, well, we're going to open a new size called Barrafina in Covent Garden. That's going to be on middle of June. That restaurant is going to have like a counter. You can see all the seafood, and we cook straight away from you. We're going to have a chowder to cook Pyrenees and Basque beef. Also, we're going to have a private room downstairs. where we're going to have a separate kitchen as well. Because in Barrafina, you cannot have kids. We don't do any bookings. Yes, we're going to do downstairs like a private rooms. Like this, people can have like a feast. That's the idea, to do downstairs, you know, people sit down on the tables and just relax and cook amazing cycling pig. That's one of my specialty as well. Make sure people are having fun.
Let's get back to you, Chef. Your name is Nieves, which means, that's your first name, which means snow, but you have a very, very sunny disposition, and you come from a very sunny place. Tell us a little bit about your background. Where do you come from, and how did you get into cooking, and how did you end up from sunny Spain in rainy England?
It's really funny. So many people has been asking me as well that question, how comes a young person come to England when it's, you know, I live by the seaside, it's sunny. I just decided to come to London when I was 21 because I thought it was the right time for a young person to do something different. Supposed to be come to England for 1 year, but when I came here, I just fell in love and to meet so many different people and so many different cuisines. That every day I was learning. I'm not saying like before I wasn't learning, because in that time I was only like 2 or 3 years cooking in my country. But in the meantime, I didn't want to live for such a long time. My mom always has been a very good cooker, and I've been cooking with her since I was very young, because my grandma used to be paralyzed, and I used to spend a lot of time with my mom peeling potatoes and peeling onions, like very simple stuff, but as an entertainer, and I realized that's what I want to do. When I came to England, I was like, wow, I saw so many different ingredients that I never thought even exist when I went to England, because so many cosmopolitan ingredients, vegetables, even fish and seafood that I couldn't escape. And that's 17 years later, I'm still in London.
Now you come from a region known for Basque cooking, which is a very interesting cuisine. Tell us a little bit about that, and why is it that so many experimental chefs who have been successful come from the Basque country, but they don't lose their local traditions either, do they? They combine them.
I'm from Bilbao, and I think Basque people is, for us, food is one of the most important things. For us, is we need to eat all the time. Eat and good and drink a good wine is, for us, is a mission, no? Everywhere where you go in the Basque country, everywhere in a single bar, you will see food, and always will be a grill where when you're having your glass of wine, you will have food coming. And the food for us is real. I mean, for us, have breakfast, especially lunch and dinner, is always on the table. Every family is sit down and they cook your lunch and the dinner. We sit down and you cook your dinner. You cook your dinner and you sit down. It's part of the family and it's part of our lives. Food. And as I say, drink as well. Some people more drink than food, but it's not my case. My case is more food than the wine, anyway.
Well, now, okay, we're at Fino, which is, I don't know, it used to be the flagship of the Hart Brothers restaurant. The major restaurant owned by the Hart Brothers. Now, they now have a whole bunch of other restaurants, but is this still the main restaurant for them? They are by heritage Spanish.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you see, for me, I'm the chef from Fino and Barrafina, but for me, Fino is a restaurant. You see what I mean? Fino is, how can I explain this? It's special. It's special. You wanna have a sit down properly. Fino is the Spanish restaurant at the moment. And we are the pioneers. We've been one of the pioneers as a main restaurant. For me, Fino, I love Barrafina, but for me, Fino is special. Here is where you have to care, and people, when they come here, they know they're gonna come to have a good meal. and everything is takes, you know, more care, and it's more special, and you know, this belongs, is in my heart, eh? And the same for Samaneri, this is the first baby they have. Now we, you know, they have Fina, they have a Cubo Body, which is amazing, amazing restaurant, but Fino is the, we call it our first baby.
What style of Spanish cooking do you do here, or do you have styles representing all the different regional cuisines of Spain? I mean, there's so many different regional styles. What is Fino?
Fino is what I think it should be when you go in a Spanish restaurant. I'm Basque. It doesn't mean I'm only cooking Basque cuisine. No, I love food, and I love all the regions' food from all over Spain. So even today in the menu, you will see it, we go frit Mallorquin, which is a dish from Mallorca. I got dishes from Catalonia, from South Spain, from Madrid. I love cooking, and I don't want to be only Basque. No. I love Galicia, I love Asturias. So Fino is the representation of a little bit of everything.
So it wouldn't be accurate to call it a tapas restaurant. It's a small plate restaurant.
It is a small place, and I won't call it only like a Fino is not only tapas. You see, for me, that's what I say. It is a tapas, because everyone when it comes here, it wanna eat so many different dishes. Fino is more than tapas, a restaurant. You know, food is being carried so much with amazing ingredients, and you will see, you will have so many different, but they're not really like tiny like you can find in another tapas restaurant.
I was going to ask, what do you think we might have tonight? Let's make it real in terms of the kinds of things that people are going to eat here, because I'm sure we're going to encourage you to choose what you think are the things we will enjoy the most. So tell our listeners what those might be.
Definitely, you must have our croquetas. Is actually my mom's recipe with a little bit of twist. But croquetas you must have. I really want you to have the monkfish seafood rice, pinchos morunos, belly pork, one of the classics, our pan tumaca, our jamón, our amazing acorn ham, tortillas. If you like our tortillas, it's been made basically a la minute. And we cook them by order, nice and warm and runny in the middle. Yeah, octopus from Galicia. That's another... Today we got two types of rice. We got the monkfish seafood rice, and then we got our classic called arroz negro, which is black rice as well. It's such a classic dish.
Do you have espardenhas?
I do once a year. Very difficult to get espardenhas, and I try to get in the ortiguillas. You know what is the ortiguillas? It's from South Spain as well, called anemonas. As well, and I love, you know, espardenhas. Very difficult to find them fresh, and also not for everyone pockets. Yeah, very. I have something special today, which is angulas. I don't know if you heard before angulas. Eels, but that was a present from a friend of mine. I would love you to have, yeah.
Now, we were talking before. In your country, part of Spain, they are famous for their men's cooking clubs, all men's, right? But now we have so many women chefs coming out of that part of Spain. And then we also have so many different wines. Your region is known for cider, but there's so many different wines from all over Spain. What kind of a wine program do you have here? Are all the wines Spanish?
Oh yeah. All our wine list is Spanish. You know, that's why Fino is a pure Spanish restaurant. From the wine, from the cooking, everything where we go is Spanish, because we want to, when the people come to Fino, to have the experience of a Spanish restaurant. And we use again all different types or regions of wine. We go from Madrid, from Mallorca, from Rioja, from Galicia, Albariño, and all is pure Spanish. Yeah, definitely.
Now, had you already left Spain? You know, you wouldn't have when all of a sudden, because of Ferran Adrià, Spain topped the list of the best restaurants in the world. But most of them were not traditional. They were experimental. Were you influenced at all by this?
I mean, I'm no experimental chef. I like to eat an expression we have in Spain is with a spoon in the hand and a piece of bread in the left hand. And that's the way we like to eat. So I like to cook traditional dishes. So much respect for Ferran Adrià. He's been in one of Barrafina's restaurants. He's been in Cubo Badis as well. I mean, he's a genius. But it's not my type of cooking, experimental. No, I fancy making braisings and stewings, and that's my cooking. Yeah.
It's sort of the soul of Spanish cooking anyhow, yeah. Do you use all British ingredients? Now, you import a lot from Spain.
That's a very good question. I'm in England, so I use English vegetables. I use my English fish from the Channel. I do get all my Iberico pork. I get that from Spain because I cannot get it in England, obviously. But we live in England, so we use our English products. But when it comes like Iberico or the ham, all that is coming from Spain. And sometimes I do have like white asparagus and things like this where I cannot get it here. So I do get it from Spain. Yeah.
Well, this is exciting and I look forward to trying the items you mentioned. And I really thank you for talking to us, and good luck on your new venture as well. You're going to be one very busy lady.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm going to be really, really busy. And I hope today you get my passion on my cooking and understand what I'm trying to do, which is very simple. Just people put a smile in the face when they're eating, and that's what we want to do. Thank you very much.
And don't go away, because we'll be back after this short break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. It's always a delight to encounter new talent, new chefs, new restaurants that we enjoy so thoroughly. And that happened to be the case. It's always the case in London, I guess.
We want to introduce them separately because they're really, really, really worth it. But let me say that both in common are the toughest tables in town.
Yes.
With a 6 to 12 week lead time to be able to get a reservation. They're within two floors of each other. In the Heron Tower on 38, half of 39 and the 40th floor. And we started out on the 38th floor with Claudia Cardozo, extraordinarily talented chef at Sushi Samba.
I have been reading about Sushi Samba for I don't know how many years. It's not a new concept, but I guess it's pretty new to London. And we're going to be talking to Claudio Cardozo, who is a United Nations unto himself. Welcome, Claudio, and you are the executive chef of this London operation of Sushi Samba. I want to know a little bit about your peripatetic background, how you moved around all these different places.
Well, it's a funny story. For me, I started really young in the kitchen when I was around 15 years old. My mom put me a little bit into the direction of being a chef, which for me, when she spoke about it with me, if I wanted to become a chef and if I wanted to go to a proper chef school, I said straight away, yes. You know, it was something that I had a lot of passion. My family was a bit in the business as well. So for me, it was something that was,
No, I didn't want to interrupt, but you missed out that you were born in South Africa but your father was Portuguese and you are talking about a period when you actually were in Portugal. and you were raised in Portugal, and you never told me about this business. Tell me about your family business.
You're absolutely correct. I was born in South Africa, in Johannesburg. I moved to Cape Town when I was really young, and obviously with the apartheid happening in South Africa, we decided to move, and we went to Portugal. Then in South Africa, my uncles and aunts, they already had a pastry really successful in Johannesburg. It was one of the most successful pastries in Johannesburg. So I had always a bit of a sweet taste, I would say. Yeah, it was something that I was already into when I was quite smaller. Not that I would spend lots of days there working, but I was always curious about food and always trying to see what they were up to and trying to understand what was all the rush inside the pastry and why they were always running behind their tails and trying to finish all the work that they had. So I think also that helped as well for me to rediscover what I wanted to be and obviously follow this career. Traveling side of it, as we spoke earlier, it had to do as well with my mentality back in the days. I thought for me it was really important to understand people and their culture and their food culture and understand as well the history of each country and understand the people that I was going to deliver the food to and understand what stayed behind history regarding food and the taste and the flavors that people were looking for nowadays. And I think that was for me one of the most important things of being around the world and understanding people and the food.
So you went to culinary school in Lisbon, is it? And then tell us about what happened next and how you, where else did you travel?
Sure. Well, I studied in Estoril, which is very, very close to Lisbon, which is the capital of Portugal. I started when I was 15, as I said before. I was in a school, a professional school for chefs for 3 years. On those 3 years, I worked for the Orient Express company, which they had a luxurious hotel in Lisbon. I worked as well for the Cartador, the ice cream company, as a chef developing new ideas and ice creams and showing it around all the country in Portugal. Worked for some top chefs in Portugal as well. Then I moved, I went to Bahrain for internship at the Sheraton. I stayed there almost 1 year, which I worked as well with the Sheikh of Bahrain at that time, because I was doing some work in his palaces and all these conferences and with the kings and prime ministers and all that from Saudi Arabia and all these Middle East countries. I traveled to Italy as well to discover a lot about the Italian food. Worked at some point of my career when I came back to Italy. I worked for the Bulgari there. I worked for Giorgio Armani in the Burj Khalifa in Dubai as well. Sorry, I was working for the Relais Chateau in South Africa for Jens Margaux. So yeah, I did a bit of traveling and discovered so many different approaches for food. And I think that actually made my approach to food different from where I was standing back then. Because every time I traveled, it was another that was being opened and obviously new ideas and new discoveries that I was in front of my eyes. And that helped a lot for my career and for even for myself as knowledge, as concepts that I would want to bring up and ideas and all that creativity part that's really important for a chef.
What are the hallmarks of your cooking style? You have so many influences. I don't know how you would distill it into a very personal and unique, although I guess it would have to be personal and unique with so many influences.
Me, one of the most important influences that I see in food is, first of all, nature. Colors, textures, shapes. When I'm plating a dish, I go and take them from the nature. It's not something that I'm taking from somewhere else. It's just out there in the open. Every time you go for a walk, every time you go next to the sea, to the beach, the colors, the landscapes, that helps me a lot to redesign my dishes. Regarding food as it is and for people to taste, my inspiration would be on people. I think the people are the key ingredient for the food to be successful. They are the people that will make us our food successful by the end of the day. And the third one, I would say my influence comes a little bit from the artistic part that I have as well. When I was really young, when I was a young chef, I was also doing some graffiti painting and paintings and canvases. So I also enjoy a lot painting. So the artistic part blend together with the people and the nature. That's where I get all my inspiration from.
Let's turn our attention to this sushi samba. It is a fusion concept. And it started in the United States. The first one opened in New York. Maybe you could explain a little bit more about the concept. And you mentioned young people, and I wondered if that's a demographic that that this concept appeals to the most?
Well, not, I wouldn't say underpinned. I think that back in the days when we opened in New York, it wasn't something really common. The sushi and the Japanese food wasn't something very, very popular back in the days. Now it's something more, I think it's all over the show and there's so many restaurants. But when we opened, I think it was amazing that to put together a colorful culture and a mix of lovely flavors with the culture that is so simple and so respectful about the ingredients. I think both blended together, and we representing Nikkei cuisine, which is the Japanese immigrants' food in South American countries. I think it's just a unique blend of spiciness with fresh ingredients, with colorful food. I wouldn't say it's not only for young people. I wouldn't say that, 100% not. I think the approach that we see from young people is just different because they are curious to see what we're doing. But I would say anyone is more than welcome to try our food because our food is for all ages. It doesn't really matter what age or culture you are. I think it's just the food that goes well with a lot of people. And that's one of my goals when I create a menu or when I do dish is to make sure that actually everybody will get the same experience in their mouth with the flavors and nobody will be left on the side on this one.
Yeah, well, you mentioned large crowds, fast turnover. The whole idea of the name Samba implies a certain liveliness to the style. And is that the atmosphere of Sushi Samba?
100%. The Samba is really, really into the restaurant with the music, with the pace, with the speed of the restaurant. It's in everyone that starts here, you know, that you might not get the Samba feel for the first month, but after the first month, for sure, if you're working here, you will get that Samba feeling. And I think it just comes everything together. You know, the music, the atmosphere is amazing. You know, the lightning, the space itself, it just breathes a different air. I think it's completely different. You know, it's a concept, not a concept, but I think each restaurant is so unique. The restaurants that we have, they are so different from each other, but at the same, you can feel the same smells and you can feel the same energy whatever location you will go.
Talk to us a little bit about what's on the menu.
Well, I think the menu is quite, I wouldn't say big, but I can say that there's options for all tastes. If people don't like sushi as much as they like, let's say, grilled meat, I think they will have both options. But we start with a small section of aperitivos on arrival. When you arrive, it's something that you can nibble in with your drink, with your cocktails. So you always have the small aperitivos, like the green bean tempura with the truffle aioli, which is one of the ones that people like the most. You have the small edamame, which is something that people also like to start with. And then we move on with things like taquitos. We have like a selection of taquitos, which is really good and unique. You have the normal tuna tataki with it's a bit more traditional. I wouldn't say that it has a lot of fusion or influence. So on the small plates, you will have always something that has a little bit of a Japanese twist. You will have a rock shrimp tempura. You will have probably a vegetable tempura as well. You have a wagyu tataki with foie gras and fried egg, which is something that is not so traditional. But then we also add the ahi panca, which is a really, really interesting sauce from Peru, which gives it a really, really nice flavor in the end, perfumed, a little bit smoky as well. Then we have a section which is the raw bar, where we do the ceviches and the tiraditos, which is more Peruvian, but also we try to give it a little bit of the Japanese influence. And then we have the rabata section. The rabata is like a grill section. We use Japanese charcoal that comes from Japan, the binchotan. And then we cook all types of food, but mainly we have dancuchos that are Peruvian. Then we have things that are more Japanese, the amachi kama, which is the color from the amachi, which is really nice on the grill. On the rabata, we have pork ribs, we have lamb chops with a red miso. I think there's food for all tastes. Then we have the large plates, which we have from the moqueca, which is something really traditional from Brazil, which is a dish that has a lot of history behind it. You have the churrasco, which is also very, very popular in Brazil, which is something that Brazilians love, which is just grilling their quality meat and in the fire and just with salt, and obviously they have their sides of beans and the farofa. So it's something that is simple, but it has to have all to do with the product. The quality of the product has to be really good because there's not much technique to cover the quality of it. And then we have the sushi selection. We have the sambar rolls, which is a selection of sushi. Then you have sashimi, quality fish. Well, that's it. You know, as I said, there's I think options for everyone. If you like sushi, you can have sushi. If you're not a fan of raw fish, you have all the selection of the rabata, the small dishes, and even the main dishes. We have, for example, a lemon sole on the bone, which is really good as well. We cover it with polenta, and then it goes with a Peruvian salad with celery, with the maíz morado, which is a black corn. There's really options for every single taste, I would say.
It sounds like a huge menu. So I'm looking forward to sampling that. Let's tell people how to get a reservation and also your website so they can check further on what you're doing.
Sure. To get a reservation, well, you have to contact us, go through the website. It's not that easy to get a reservation. Unfortunately, we have a waiting period of around 2 months. But it really depends. You know, you can be really lucky and come into the restaurant and have a space in the sushi bar and we'll accommodate. You can be really lucky, come for a couple of drinks in the bar and actually come to the reservation, to the desk in the reception and ask for a table. And probably we'll be lucky and we can accommodate you as a walk-in. But usually it's through the website. You have to be really patient, I guess. But I think it's worth the wait for what we've been doing here and for the space and the location and all that. Well, and to see what we're doing, I think if you visit sushisamba.com, I think you will find all the information of what we're doing, the changes on the menus, our party menus, our bar menus, lounge menus. Everything's there, all the information. You have some pictures as well of the location, some pictures of the food as well. So there's a lot in the website that you can dig in and find a lot about not only the London location, but I think Sushi Samba in general as a big company that it is.
Well, I don't have to ask you this final question because you've already told us that. How is London receiving the concept and Sushi Samba? And apparently you're storming full steam into success.
That's true. I would say right now in London, we're becoming more and more well-known and popular, and I think it has to do with the excellency of product that we try to deliver, and we give 100% every day to make sure that every single guest that walks into the store is accommodated and has a really, really wonderful experience with us and tries as much as they can from our food. And not only that, feel that they just had a memorable experience and that they will come back. Definitely. I think right now we're moving towards the busiest period of the year, but I would say that we are right now so busy that I'm not imagining the picture in 1 or 2 months with the World Cup coming, and we're going to be the main place for the matches to be seen, and there's going to be big parties happening here when Brazil is playing. So I think there's a lot going on, and I think it will be a wonderful year again, and Sushi Samba hopefully will continue in London being successful as it's been so far. That's my wishes.
Well, certainly, that would be. And Claudio, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
What can we say about Sushi Samba and Claudio Cardoso? We can say it's worth the wait.
Yeah, it is indeed.
A spectacular place, a spectacular setting.
And the views, yeah. Oh.
Spectacular food. What can we say? Go there, right?
Go there.
It's worth all the trouble.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station. www.aspstation.net.
As we said just a few minutes ago, it only takes you two stories to go from Sushi Samba to Duck and Waffle, which of course shares the same magnificent view, a rather different view on life, a menu that's rather more traditional but still kind of cute and innovative in its own way. Chef Dan Doherty talked to us about that, and he talked about the dining habits and drinking habits of the people who go there 24 hours a day,
yeah,
7 days
a week. Yeah, the first 24/7 restaurant in London. Daniel Doherty, I was surprised to find out, or I was not surprised to find out, that you are from the north of Ireland, where we have a friend named Donal Doherty, or at least your father actually is from the north of Ireland. We just had a really interesting breakfast at Duck and Waffle, where you're the executive chef. Breakfast is just a little part of this operation, because it goes on all day long, and there's a different menu. Actually, I had my heart on raw oysters, but I'll have to come back later to do that. I was just curious, about, first of all, your background. Tell us where you come from, how you got into this business, which you apparently began at a very early age, and then we'll go from there to the concept of Duck and Waffle. First, let's introduce you.
Thank you very much. So yes, I'm Dan Doherty from Duck and Waffle. As you rightly say, you know, my heritage of my family is from the north of Ireland. However, I'm very much from England, and my upbringing was in Shropshire, in the middle of England. And I moved to London when I was 16, having won a very great opportunity to do a scholarship with the Academy of Culinary Arts. And here I am now, 15 years later, and hopefully still going in the right direction. And I think London's ever-changing. So whilst you feel like you've been here for a long time, it's a very different place to what it was 5 years ago, and like, you know, in that kind of five-year increments. So.
Well, now, it's a very cosmopolitan city. You traveled much?
Yeah, I make every effort to travel, you know, especially, I mean, I've been all over Africa, Asia, Southeast Asia, America a lot. I think traveling is apart from eating out in restaurants, I think traveling is the best way to stimulate your creative side and to, you draw in influences. Whilst, you know, I'm predominantly cooking British food, you'll go somewhere and you may not take a dish and replicate it, but you'll take an idea of using acidity in a different way, or using salt in a different way, or the spectrum of flavors and ingredients that you can find all over the world.
It's interesting that you mentioned acidity. That's become, as far as I can tell, one of the newer concerns of chefs, is balancing acidity. It comes up over and over and over again when we're interviewing chefs.
Well, I think it comes from those long 10-course meals at very traditional French restaurants, where by the end of it you can barely breathe because you're so full of butter and cream, and the only way to cut that is with either a really, really intelligently sourced wine, which helps. You can also lighten food by using acidity, so it's not necessarily making eye squint because it's got that much acidity in it, but it's just a case of just cleansing it a little bit, so it's a little bit fresher on the palate, and it's less intrusive.
Now, you've had some interesting mentors or heroes. Tell us a little bit about who you've had as a mentor. Rue Brothers, I think, is one, and also what are some of the other kinds of influences that you've crossed into?
I think my main mentor was Herb Berger at 1 Lombard Street. You know, I spent 4 years at his restaurant, and then a following 2 years under his guidance in other restaurants, where he's a brilliant man, and his palate, even now, 15 years later, I've still not met anybody who can strip out something in his mouth and really understand exactly what's gone into it, what's needed. Brilliant mentor, you know, very much tough love, you know. I was 16 and I needed that. I think every 16-year-old needs a little bit of discipline. But it was brilliant. And even now I look back and I still draw inspiration. Even though the dishes were very classic, it was just the sheer intelligence behind the flavor combinations was, yeah, second to none.
Now, do you view this as a hallmark of your cooking style, this kind of precision of balancing tastes?
I think when you draw on all of the influences of your career, whether it's your foundation to working with other chefs, working for other chefs, chef friends, eating out, pull inspiration, and ultimately that's kind of molding you into who you are. And I'd like to think that the organization and of a kitchen and that kind of the brigade setup and how organized we need to be in a 24-hour restaurant comes from that upbringing in Lombard Street. But also in terms of the dishes, yeah, I'd like to think that we achieve something at least close. I don't think I could beat him, but we can try.
Now, you said 24-hour restaurant. Is it really open 24/7?
24/7, 365. We never close.
Who comes here at 4 in the morning?
Be surprised. I think Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, they're the slower days. Still sort of 60, 70 people between midnight and 5 a.m. But when we hit the latter part of the week, we're talking 300 people between midnight and 5 a.m. And that can be, you know, we're on the cusp of Shoreditch, East London, which is, you know, where it's all happening right now, and everyone comes here afterwards. So long as we're a 24-hour restaurant, we're not a nightclub, we're not a bar. So people come, they eat, they have drinks, they have fun, and they leave. We get a lot of, everyone comes here. We're not intrusive of people's private lives. So we do get some celebrities coming, and 4 o'clock in the morning, they don't get any bother. Whereas if they were to go at 10 o'clock in the evening, maybe it's a little bit much for them, you know. So at least I'd like to think we cover a broad spectrum of people here.
Well, I keep hearing from my Twitter buddies how much fun it is coming here. People come here to have a really good time and to eat. No, we had breakfast menu. And true to the name of the restaurant, I had a duck egg, but it also had wild mushrooms, cheese, and truffles on it, and with soldiers, I might say. And then Peter had an ox tongue Benedict. The menu changes. Then you have a sweet section, and I don't want to leave out that how appealing the decor is. It's really wonderful contemporary decor, and I loved your open kitchen, which is a really nice one. It's a very beautiful open kitchen, square and easy to see and on all sides. Tell us what happens with the menu for the rest of the day.
Well, we have, as you rightly said, we have a breakfast menu which we serve from 6 a.m. until 11 a.m. And then we go into what we call an all-day menu. So we have a selection of freshly baked breads which we cook to order in a wood oven. We have a raw bar. We have lots of small plates, lots of large dishes to share for the table. And we have that available from pretty much midday, straight after breakfast, right the way through until midnight, at which point the menu will then change one more time. Originally, in the beginning, we wanted to serve that all-day menu right the way through the night. But what we found was people eat differently at different times of the day, hence why we serve breakfast and lunch and dinner, and that's the way it goes. 4 a.m., people, I imagine before we opened that we'd be selling a lot of dainty raw fish and, you know, kind of chic, refined food. But it wasn't the case. People want substance. They want, you know, we do an ox cheek grilled cheese with a fried egg and hot sauce. We do, you know, the breakfast you had, we actually have that on overnight because people like eggs and, you know, that's, especially, it's more indulgent, more, the kind of food that makes you feel like you're getting a hug. So that's what we put on overnight. So the menu gets a little bit smaller, and it is the more sort of substantial dishes. And then at 6 a.m. we flip back to breakfast, and, you know, the cycle is complete, so to speak.
Let's talk a little bit about your drinks program. Peter had the most disgusting cocktail for breakfast. Well, of course, I don't like Marmite very much anyhow, but it was Marmite and Guinness with champagne. Do you have a lot of wacky cocktails?
We do. We have a very creative head of spirit and development drinks guy. He's very, very smart in how he takes something classic like a black velvet, which is champagne and Guinness mixed together. It's a classic. But when you pick up on braised beef, for example, beef and Guinness goes well together, right? Makes sense. When you pick up on Guinness, you get these dark chocolatey tastes, which go well with a deep meaty taste. So it kind of made sense. That's what Marmite is essentially. It's a concentrated meat juice. So it kind of makes sense. And I guess, you know, Marmite is, you either love it or you hate it. And that's the way it goes. We do, you know, we offer obviously all normal drinks if people want them, the classics. But I think people like to, especially when you wait 2 months for a reservation, which can happen here, it's nice to come here and have something special and to have something different. And I think the food, whilst some of the food is more creative, some of it's quite, you know, I love big Italian flavors. We have a wild garlic gnocchi on the menu. There's nothing, I'm not doing anything that's not already been done. You're just taking great ingredients, doing as little as possible, trying not to mess them up. And that speaks for itself. So when that's contrasted by a little bit of a wacky cocktail, I think that's kind of cool.
Well, I think overall this is really, it's social and sociable and delicious as well.
We forgot one of the most significant things about Duck and Waffle. It's 40 stories in the air. And 40 stories in the air on a beautiful day like today gives you a view halfway to Southend, and halfway to Brighton and halfway to Oxford, if I'm picking various different directions. And it gives a rather unique view of the City of London. The Tower of London looks like a Lego block castle. Tower Bridge looks tiny. The Gherkin right next door looks very large. And you can see something that's going on all the way around you, something new being built all the time. Is that a sort of a stimulation?
Absolutely. I think before we opened, until the point where we are now, 2 years on, I'd like to think that we've evolved as much as a restaurant as our surroundings have. So it's always changing. We're always, you know, we look at the menu. I'm looking now at this dessert menu and we're looking at, okay, so I know I have an idea of what I want to put on the menu. Where is it going to fit in? How is it going to be different? You may go traveling, pick up an idea. You're constantly evolving and changing. And that doesn't mean you're changing the things that people like about you to become someone new, because that would be pointless. But what it means is we have what we think now is a foundation, and we're kind of building on that. And ultimately, that's what's happening around us. You look at the buildings going up, we're going to tear down St. Paul's. You know what I mean? But we are going to build some new funky buildings. And I'd like to think that happens in restaurants as well. You know, restaurants now that have been over 20 years, some of them are exactly as they were 20 years ago, and we love them for it. But others are kind of adapting to their surroundings. And you are, you know, you bring different influences. I have a great team. We have 40-odd chefs, all from different parts of the world. And sometimes they come to you and say, listen, this, you know, where I'm from, we do this, and you like to try it. And you try it, and you think, oh, my God, how have I never had this before? And then you think that would be really good with, you know, and you're evolving and you're changing. So London is a wonderful place, and it is becoming even better, I think. And it's setting itself apart. And I'd like to think that Duckamoff was playing a part in that by becoming 24 hours. And hopefully there'll be more to follow, because there's a demand. There really is.
You mentioned chefs and your staff. Your staff is wonderful. I've never encountered such an easy transition from one phase of entering the restaurant to another phase of coming down here. It's so smoothly. It's wonderful. And I wanted to make sure that, since you said there was such a long waiting list for getting in, the quickest way to get a reservation is?
Well, if you know, traditionally, obviously, we kind of book 6 weeks in advance to 2 months. But what happens is a lot of people, and, you know, a lot of restaurants struggle with this, people don't show for their reservations. So it's always worth just coming along and go for a drink in the bar and just ask, are there any tables? And, you know, we can't guarantee it, but you may wait 20 minutes, you may wait an hour. But it's kind of, you know, if you have time on your hands and you have a plan B, if there are no tables, then why not give it a go and just turn up? You know, I do that sometimes, and sometimes you get lucky.
And let's do this website, which is www.duckandwaffle.com. And I guess there's a lot of information on the website as well. Well, Daniel, it's been really eye-opening and most enjoyable to meet you and meet this restaurant, this concept, and I loved it here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, I guess if I've been drinking and it's 5 a.m, I could get goosed by a duck egg. I couldn't resist. I'm so sorry.
Why until next week, why didn't you just say goodbye?
Bye-bye.